We're joined in studio now by Robert Travis Scott on Halloween, dressed appropriately, the head of the Public Affairs Research Council. He's in here with a cape, the Caped Crusader. Robert Travis Scott, good morning to you.
Yeah, I did wear a cape today. I didn't wear the fangs because, you know, it's kind of hard to speak clearly into a microphone when you're wearing those fangs, so I have to put those in later today. Also brought candy for
everybody. Yeah. So, well, so what are your plans tonight on Halloween?
Probably my girls are old enough now that they don't go trick-or-treating anymore, but we have just hundreds of people come to our house in our neighborhood, so I'll probably just sit out front with our with a jack-o'-lantern and just watch all the kids in their costumes.
We live few blocks apart,
right.
So I'll send everybody to your house.
Okay. You won't be out front, Jim?
No.
No? I thought you had the scariest house in the neighborhood.
Well, maybe so, but I don't want anybody knocking on my door while I'm trying to prepare for tomorrow's show.
Okay, good for you.
But we're trying to get information about what's on the ballot next Tuesday, independent of the congressional races, and there are some important amendments, and you are the amendment guy, Robert Travis Scott, and let's start with number one. Do you support an amendment to prohibit a convicted felon from seeking or holding office or appointment within 5 years of completion of his sentence unless he is pardoned? Why is this something that we need to put in our Constitution?
Well, we had in our Constitution a 15-year period of time after you finish your felony sentence, and the state Supreme Court said, no, that doesn't pass muster because of the way the legislature passed it incorrectly, and so that went away. And now the legislature is bringing back a similar type of constitutional provision, only this one would be 5 years instead of 15 years. So you got to wait 5 years after your felony conviction and you're serving your sentence.
All right. And a listener has noted that Edwin Edwards ran for office after serving 8.5 years in the federal penitentiary, but that was for a federal office. He could not at that time have been eligible to run for a statewide office.
That's right. At that time, he would not have been eligible.
But if this passes, he is eligible to run again. He's 91 years old. He could run for governor next year if he wanted to.
It would appear that if this passes, he would be able to run again.
Wouldn't that be something to have two Governor Edwards on the ballot next year running for governor of Louisiana?
Well, he hasn't taken that. I know that would make you happy, Jim, because it would be such good radio every day of the week. But
And there's probably somebody else in the state named John Kennedy. We might have a plethora of John Kennedys on the ballot, too. That would just mess up everybody, wouldn't it?
This is a trick-or-treat show, I think. These are just your favorite election fantasies, Jim.
Okay, Amendment 2, which is the one that has received the most attention. Do you support an amendment to require a unanimous jury verdict in all non-capital felony cases for offenses that are committed on or after January 1, 2019? Meaning that if you committed something on December 31st of 2018, this would not apply.
Well, that's right. But it's absolutely and definitely a reform. We have so many inconsequential matters that have come before the voters over the years asking us to weigh in on a constitutional change. This one is an issue that actually belongs in the Constitution. It's something very fundamental. And Louisiana is one of only two states that do not require a unanimous jury for verdicts. And what this would do is it would say in all felony cases you have to have the 12 out of 12 for a verdict, one up or down. And this is very significant. I think it will probably send an important message to the rest of the country about, you know, where we are on this. Now, there are those who are opposed to it, and they say the current system is efficient, and we need a system where that would hold up under the Supreme Court rulings, and we've already had two Supreme Court rulings saying that a non-unanimous jury is okay. I think what we saw during this whole process was the House and Senate came together in favor of this. You had the advocate doing a really great investigative piece on it. They sort of did their job. And you had groups on both the left and the right supporting this move. And so the chemistry kind of came together for this, mm-hmm. whereas in years past it had not. So I think it's a very significant change, one that voters ought to look at very closely. Make sure you go in and vote for vote on this issue, because it really does matter.
Well, some thought that the DAs would be against this, but they're not. It appears that this one is going to pass with flying colors, as they say.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the district, the DAs, you know, in the past have not been too keen on this, but this time around, generally speaking, they pulled back, and some DAs have been in favor of it. The DA here in Baton Rouge, Heller Moore, has endorsed this amendment. All this is very significant. It's a kind of a cultural change as well as a legal change that you're seeing. And so we'll see how this comes out in the end. You know, Senator Dan Clater, who stood up on the Senate floor and endorsed this and tried to get his other members to vote for it, he did so successfully, made a case that the DAs in the past, from his own experience in DA's office, it kind of gamed the system in the 10 to 12 jury, because you can have you have to have a unanimous jury for lesser felonies with a six-member jury, and you can kind of game the system between those two levels. And he thought it was inappropriate, and it was time for a change.
And he used to work for Harry Connick, so he knows a little bit about what he's talking about.
He knows what he's talking about. So I should mention, Jim, you know, don't go into the voting booth without knowing what these are all about. You can check our website, parlouisiana.org. We're the Public Affairs Research Council. We're just known as PAR, P-A-R. So go to parlouisiana.org. You'll see our voter guide there. We don't tell you how to vote on these things, but we do tell you the arguments for and against. You can make up your own mind. Another great resource, you know, is our state Secretary of State mobile app, Go Vote. And of course, Go in Louisiana is always G-E-A-U-X, I guess. So it's Go Vote. Download that app. You can see your ballot. You can see who's going to be on your ballot. It's a very lengthy ballot this time around for most people. And you could also even check voting results the day after the vote.
We'll talk about the Secretary of State's race with Robert Travis Scott as well, but the other amendment that has received some attention is number 4. Do you support an amendment to remove authority to appropriate or dedicate monies in the Transportation Trust Fund to state police for traffic control purposes? This is something that many who are concerned about the conditions of our roads and bridges believe is a necessity.
Well, this is another fairly important amendment. We have a transportation trust fund that is funded by the fuel tax. And over the years, there have been various purposes that you could spend that money on. Mostly it's supposed to be for roads, highways, ports, other types of infrastructure. But the Constitution also allows the money to be spent by state police on traffic control purposes. And the state police would argue this is a legitimate expense that they have, and it's all part of keeping the highways clear, and so you know it's something that you should be able to transfer out of the TTF. But it's been about $700 million that's been transferred out of there since 1990. So a lot of people said, no, we need to stop that practice.
877-217-5757 is your number. Robert Travis Scott is with us, the president of the Public Affairs Research Council, former Capitol Bureau chief for the Picayune. We're back after this timeout.
I'm Don Molino on the Voice of Louisiana Agriculture Radio Network Studios, powered by Louisiana Propane. Today's opening market report, sponsored by Mueller Metal Buildings and Roofing. For 85 years, Mueller has manufactured metal barns, workspaces, and roofing for the farm and rural lifestyle. Visit MuellerINC.com. At the Board of Trade this hour, November soybeans unchanged, 833.5. January, 846.5, down a half. December cotton, 76.72, down 18. March, 78.11, down 25. December corn, 363, down 1 and 3 quarters. March, down 1 and 3 quarters, 375 and a half. November rise, 1040, down 4. January, 1046 and a half, up 2 and a half. March wheat at Chicago, 508 and a half, down 9. July, down 9, 527 and 1 half. January sugar unchanged, 2515. At the Mercantile, October live cattle, 113.85, down 5. I'm Don Molino on the Voice of Louisiana Agriculture Radio Network.
If you're from the South, you know there's no such thing as a stranger. Your mother's real name is Ma'am, and if it's on a plate, it had better be fried. And if you're a farmer in the South, you know that DeKalb, Asgro, and Delta Pine are the South's finest in corn, soybeans, and cotton, delivering the highest yield potential on your farm with the seed that makes the South grow. Find the seed for your acres at growthesouth.com.
There are just some things I don't like doing, and throwing out food is a big one. It's such a waste. Well, here's an easy way to turn those leftovers into a whole new meal. Start with rice. Rice goes with everything. Got some leftover chicken? Throw it in. Got some broccoli you need to use fast? Bring it on. Sprinkle on some seasonings and dig in. Tonight, show those leftovers some love. Just start with rice. Another tasty little tip from the proud farmers of Certified Louisiana Rice.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robert Travis Scott, who was one of the top journalists in North America before he took his role as head of the Public Affairs Research Council, is here with us. We're talking about the election, well, 6 days away now. And by the way, how many years have you been with PAR now?
Started as president in 2011.
So 7 years now. Yeah. And you've been through a few of these amendments. Now, some of the others have not received the attention of the ones we have mentioned, and let's go through them briefly. Number three, do you support an amendment to permit, pursuant to written agreement, the donation of the use of public equipment and personnel by a political subdivision upon request to another political subdivision for an activity or function which the requesting political subdivision is authorized to exercise?
Jim, wow, that's the ballot says. That's another reason why you need to get boned up on these before you go in there. Yeah, that's lost even me on that. So
what does that mean?
Look, basically, local governments can share equipment, personnel. This could be a parish, a city, a fire district, anything. And in abundance of caution, the legislature thought maybe they should give constitutional protection when one local government entity wants to loan or share something with another local government entity, and maybe
wouldn't
not get full compensation.
Better to phrase it that way than this way.
Amen.
All right. Number five, do you support an amendment to extend eligibility for the following special property tax treatments to property and trust? The special assessment level for property tax valuation, the property tax exemption for property of a disabled veteran, and the property tax exemption for the surviving spouse of a person who died while performing their duties as a first responder, active duty member of the military, or law enforcement.
And on it goes. That's right. It's another case of where we have our Constitution. We have a lot of minutia in it, especially when it comes to property tax exemptions. Just to make this simple, some people have trust, and some people have their homes in trust, and they may want to continue to live in it until they turn that over to their grandchildren or children. And what this amendment would do is it would say, you know, you already can keep your homestead exemption in that situation, but the people with that trust would be able to be eligible for all these other property tax exemptions that are added on there, such as like disabled veterans and so on. It's not very many people have a trust in this situation, and not very many people among those are going to be eligible for these particular exemptions. So it affects a small number of people.
And number six, do you support an amendment that will require that any reappraisal of the value of residential property by more than 50%, resulting in a corresponding increase in property taxes, be phased in over the course of 4 years, during which time no additional reappraisal can occur, and that the decrease in the total ad valorem tax collected as a result of the phase-in of assessed valuation be absorbed by the taxing authority and not allocated to other taxpayers?
Holy cow. Okay. This is sounds more complicated than it really is, but if you have a property tax assessment that leaps up, it's mm-hmm. a super increase of 50% or more. Basically, what this means is that your assessment remains the same, but your tax collector, the sheriff, in probably most cases mm-hmm. like here, they're basically going to phase in that big leap in your actual property tax paid. So they'll phase it in over 4 years. The odd part about this is if you have a 50% increase, You're actually going to be paying less under this than somebody who has a 40% or even a 35% increase because of this phase-in. If you are under the 50%, you don't get the phase-in treatment. This is an amendment that tries to take on a problem that have been in some pockets of neighborhoods here and there, like especially New Orleans, that have been hit by the Airbnb phenomenon and have raised property values in those areas.
Well, we have uneven property assessment in Louisiana and certainly in Baton Rouge.
Well, that's right, and that's what some of the criticism of this would be. This just exacerbates, you know, an inequity problem that's there to begin with. So that's one of the criticisms against this.
I'm sure your property is assessed at the appropriate value, Robert Travis Scott. But you know, I've noted that Congressman Cassidy, he lives down the street from us at 3115 Dalrymple. He has a very low property assessment as far as what his house is actually worth. Most people, when they're in that situation, they don't run down to the assessor's office and say, hey, you know,
assess, fix this and give me a larger assessment.
So what's a person supposed to do in a case like that?
Yeah, you know, it's we see it a lot. And you can go online and you can look up your neighbors, you know,
plug in the address.
We plug in addresses. You know, I think that's really how it works. And you can sort of see what the assessments are for homes in your area. And this has been a really common complaint in Baton Rouge and in New Orleans and some other areas of the state where it really seems like, you know, the very similar house in a very similar neighborhood might be assessed very differently because historically it has been increased over time, whereas another house might have had a sale, and then they go to the new assessment on the sale price. But if you've kept a home in your family or kept a home for a really long time, then you're likely to have a lower assessment than maybe a comparable house.
Okay, and I think I refer to our senior senator is a congressman, which he was, but he is now the senior United States Senator, William Morgan Cassidy, and I did not mean to slight Senator Cassidy. Secretary of State's race. Next Tuesday, we have the race to succeed Tom Shedler. There is an interim Secretary of State in Kyle Ardoin, and he may very well be a person capable of winning this race, but he has a lot of company on the ballot.
Well, he does, and anytime you're an incumbent, even though he's not an elected incumbent, he is, he by virtue of the fact that Tom Shedler stepped down and he was the top deputy, he by law stepped into the seat and said he wasn't going to run, and then he did decide to run. So just by virtue of the fact that his name is out there a lot, I think, you know, it gives him a head up. But you have a lot of other – I'm just pulling up my Go Vote app here. You know, look at this, nine – candidates and several state legislators, Julie Stokes and Rick Edmonds, former legislator A.G. Crow, and 6 Republicans, 2 Democrats, and 1 no party.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Democrat prevails, Renee Fontenot-Free, and there's also Gwen Collins Grenup. You've probably had almost all these people on your show,
yeah,
have you not?
We have, yes.
Good for you.
Well,
I mean, but let's think about it.
Renee Free was thought to be perhaps the only Democrat, but now she has another D in there, and that could preclude her from making a runoff. But the conventional wisdom was that she would make it with one of the Republicans.
And that's right. The conventional wisdom is that since Republicans and Democrats are all running together, is that whoever is the leading Republican, even if it's a small percentage, would get in into the runoff against the Democrat likely win in a state that is very red and very pro-Trump. And I would imagine that that would be the outcome. But we'll see. We've been fooled before by our election system, and we'll just have to wait and see how all this plays out.
Rick Edmonds has been endorsed by the Baton Rouge Business Report and Rolf McCollister, but he is in a race with another candidate who has ideas very similar to his, and A.G. Crow. And quite often when we talk about Secretary of State, we go way beyond talking about elections. We talk about everything from abortion to health care, a lot of things that the Secretary of State has absolutely nothing to do with.
And then, but you, interestingly, we have some legitimate big issues like national security to talk about.
Very much so,
Secretary of State's offices have to be trained by federal authorities in how to deal with the potential tampering with voting, have to go through a lot of work and education about how to do that. There's a lot of technology they have to deal with as far as implementing new voting systems over time. And there are a lot of very sensitive voting rights issues that come up. It's actually a pretty important position for that. We haven't had a huge amount of controversy in this state over a lot of voting rights issues. And I happen to serve on the Louisiana Advisory Committee to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. And we just put out a report about voting issues in Louisiana and some areas where there might be concerns. So there are a lot of sensitive issues that come up for a Secretary of State, and that person has to show leadership in trying to do the right thing.
And Robert Travis Scott, turnout could be abysmal, or it could be surprisingly good for what amounts to a generally expected low turnout of election. We know it's going to be less than 50%, but it could be as high as 30%, which might be good.
And we've seen indications that early voting is strong. Now, that could mean that there's a lot of interest in this election, or it could mean that early voting is just getting more popular and more comfortable with people, and therefore people are just utilizing that more. I'll be very interested to see what the voter turnout is versus the early voting when all things are counted up.
Well, as noted during the presidential election of 2016, nationally, the turnout was 56%. It was higher in Louisiana. And we generally
vote. We were at 60%, I think.
Vote higher on Tuesday elections than we do on Saturday elections. Should we change to Tuesday every election like the rest of the country, or should we keep it on Saturday?
It has to do with the presidential election, I think.
And the congressional election.
Yeah, I think one of Obama's elections, we had 67% turnout, which put us, I think, in the top 10 states in terms of turnout. But if you look at our non-presidential elections, if you look at our odd-year gubernatorial elections and legislative elections, like we're going to have another one in 2019, numbers have just been declining precipitously over the
decades. Right, in fact, declining so much that Donald Trump in 2016 received more votes than John Bel Edwards and David Vitter combined received in the governor's race of 2015.
That's right.
Well, Robert Travis Scott, thank you for your insights, as always.
Get out there and vote.